Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I am still excited. And you're probably asking, why is he so excited? Well, hey, I'm excited because just this weekend, actually it was Thursday, I had my book signing. I did a book signing for my new book. If you're not aware, yes, I have a new book. It's called EQ is for Everyone. And I did a book signing at the Holiday Inn here in Tampa, and it turned out really, really well. And so if you weren't there, well, I'm going to tell you about the next location that I'll be doing the book signing at. But first of all, let me say thanks to all of the folks that turned out for the book signing that I did on Thursday evening. We had people from a number of different disciplines and a number of different occupations and a number of different walks of life. And that's the idea. The idea is to recognize and understand that EQ, or emotional intelligence, as some people refer to it as, is for everyone. It's not just for, leaders. It's not just for the academics. It's not just for, quote, people who are smart. It is indeed for everyone. And that was the message that I was trying to communicate at the book signing. But more than anything else, I was really trying to acknowledge the fact that we're on a movement. We're on a movement. And the movement is to get everyone, regardless to who you are, where you are, is to tie into or to use their emotional intelligence. Now, I'm not going to go into talking about what emotional intelligence is today or why one should use emotional intelligence or anything like that. But I just wanted to share that we had a book signing of my latest book titled EQ is for Everyone. That's what I wanted to share. And if you're interested in attending the next book signing, it's going to be in Orlando at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center, and that's going to be on July 26th from 6 until 8 p.m. July 26th from 6 until 8 p.m. at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center. Now, you'll like that establishment, one, because it's a large facility, but it's also tied to the Florida Mall, so you can get a little shopping done, okay? So anyway, that's just a little bit about the book signing that went on this past Thursday. I'm still excited about that. But I'm even more excited about our guest today. Our guest today is coming to us from the UK. Yes, that's right. Coming to us from the UK. And the topic of discussion is dementia, caregivers, and the role of emotional intelligence. Now, when I was talking about my book a minute ago, I was saying EQ is for everyone. So it ties in very well with what we're going to be talking about today, and that is how emotional intelligence ties in and can be related to and can work with people that are caregivers and or even people with dementia. Okay. So just stay tuned. We're going to have our guest. Our guest is Jacqueline Hines from the UK. I'll tell you a little bit about her. She's also the chair of the SOEI chapter at the UK. So that's a really big deal. So let me check in, just do a quick check and see if she's on the line. Good morning, Jackie. This is Dr. Hank. Are you there?
I'm here, Dr. Hank. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very, very well. Thank you. Thank you. I want to make sure we didn't lose you today, so I thought I'd just check real quick to see if you were there. So thank you for taking time to be on the show with us today. I was just sharing with our listeners that I just did a book signing on my new book titled EQ is for Everyone, and how that ties to our topic of today, and that is dementia, caregivers, and the role of emotional intelligence. In that, EQ or emotional intelligence can be used in a lot of different ways. And so I'm going to turn it over to you here in a moment and let you kind of just update us or give us some information on how you or how you see emotional intelligence being used in the area that you're in. But first, before we get started, some may not know who you are. They may have heard your name. They may have seen you on LinkedIn, but they may not quite know a little bit about you. So why don't you take a couple of minutes and just kind of share with our listeners just who you are.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Hank. My name is Jacqueline Hines. I'm an emotional intelligence coach and leadership consultant. I'm the chair of the Society of Emotional Intelligence UK chapter and board chair and international liaison for Society of Emotional Intelligence over there in Florida, USA. My background is human resource development, so that is my specialism. So working with individuals on a one-to-one coaching and in group training, I design and deliver all kinds of training. But for me, I think my real niche is emotional intelligence because it's in everything that we do. So all of the training that I've been done over the 30 years has emotional intelligence stamped all over it. So I can't get away from it.
Wow. 30 years?
Yeah.
What have you been doing those 30 years that you can say that emotional intelligence has kind of been stamped all over it?
Well, I started off in the corporate world. So I started off in banking, merchant banking, electronic brokering. So I worked for Reuters and Ernst & Young. So I was in knowledge management there and then went over into the human resource function of the National Health Service. So all the roles that I've been doing as a training facilitator and coach have been with, you know, stress management, change management, conflict resolution. All of those are, you know, relatives that sit on the family tree of emotional intelligence.
Oh,
so I've been doing
I
it
see.
A long time, understanding people, coaching around career transitioning, change initiatives, you know, organizational change and transitions. I've worked with individuals from the top down, bottom up.
Oh,
so,
okay. I got you.
Yeah, so I've been doing it a long time.
Well, again, thanks for being with us this morning. I really appreciate that. And you're going to share a little bit about this notion of dementia and the caregivers. I'm not sure how all of these tie together, so maybe we can just kind of start off. I understand you do have some background in the health and wellness arena.
Yes, I do. I have nearly 10 years in working in two of the largest merged healthcare trusts in UK and Europe, and that was Imperial College Healthcare and Barts Health. My role as a training manager, I did a lot of training with clinical and non-clinical staff. And one of the things that I was doing was actually doing dementia training with non-clinical staff. Yeah, so it was just to give them the awareness, the general awareness of what dementia was, and the kind of things that happen. Because working and walking through the hospital, sometimes you could be in a queue in the restaurant and wouldn't know that you're standing right near a dementia patient, or at the bus stop out just outside the hospital. So it was the general awareness. And then what I did was I introduced some of the clinical staff to come and, share their experiences, giving them more insight into what dementia is and, how the patients are, the patients' families, just to sort of like give them that awareness, because people aren't aware about it, or they've heard of it, but they don't really know about it.
Well, speaking of that, and I know I have very limited knowledge around dementia, and maybe some of our listeners are well versed in dementia, but maybe they have limited knowledge too. So why don't you just take a couple of minutes and just kind of help us to understand what is dementia?
Right, okay. So dementia is a general term used for progressive loss of brain functionality, and it affects the ability for the individual to live an independent lifestyle to which they're used to. It's not part of a normal aging process. It causes memory loss and affects thinking, speaking, and decision-making processes. Basically, it interferes with the normal activities of daily living. Going to the shop, handling personal finances, driving a car. If they were used to driving a car, they can't do it. And personal hygiene. So, some of the symptoms that are displayed is the person will start behaving differently. They may start to suffer with insomnia, wandering around, apathy, or even show aggression in some areas. And the final stages of dementia render the patient fully dependent upon care and support. So, it's progressive. Yeah, it's progressive.
No, because when I hear the word dementia, one of the first things I just automatically think about is an elderly person and loss of memory, and I visualize them wandering around or something like that. But, hearing what you're saying is that is sort of that's one aspect of dementia. There are many aspects of dementia, and
Many aspects, yeah.
as
And
we
also not
sometimes say,
just.
it's a whole science.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not only a portion to old people, because there are younger dementia sufferers now as well. There is a growing population of people displaying, some form of dementia. And it could be, to do with memory loss. It could be to do with the anger issues, but it's progressively there, and it's not just a portion to older people, as one would think.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see that, and thank you for sort of making that more clear. Well,
Yeah, sure.
so if that is indeed the case, often then there must be what we call caregivers or individuals who must work with those individuals. Now, without kind of defining a caregiver or what a caregiver is, because most people probably have an idea just by the term care and then giver, but what is the role of a caregiver with a dementia patient? That's the question, really.
Thanks for asking that, Dr. Hank. The role of the caregiver, it's essential to the dementia patient, and more often than not, the caregiver is a family member or close relative. They'll look after the patient, and it could be a mother, father, aunt, or uncle. And the role of the caregiver may have problems arising within their own family unit because they're apportioning all their time looking after this family member. It actually, more often than not, will affect their own family unit. And if they're married, it could affect the marriage. If they have a family of their own, children and grandchildren, it may affect the relationships there. So it really does have an impact on them, and there is little or very, very little support for caregivers in the community. And this can often lead to them missing out on essential time they need, not only for themselves to recharge their own batteries, but with their family and loved ones too.
You know, I just heard you say, you know, it could be, you know, like a family member. And when I see the term caregiver, I automatically think that it's someone that was hired by some nursing facility or hospital. But, you know, you bring it out that it could be, you know, a relative, or it could be, you know, a son or a daughter, someone just taking on the responsibility to kind of provide care for the individual. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. So that opens up a whole another way of looking at a caregiver, you know?
Yeah, and more often than not, some of them have reached retirement age themselves. So they're living on a pension, so they've got a reduced income. They may have health issues themselves that need taking care of. So that also has an impact. So, you know, within the caregiving arena, there are so many things that spring out, but so little support that is actually given to support the caregivers, give them the respite, training, development, or whatever they need. You know, so these are the things that have been highlighted as I've been sort of like working with other individuals on this.
Yeah, because when you're saying that, I'm thinking, well, wow, you know, the caregiver, it just, that responsibility may just be thrust on them. In other words, they may not be prepared to be a caregiver. They may not have, quote, gone to school and learned all of the skills of a caregiver, and yet here it is, they have to become a caregiver. So what do they do? I mean, how do they just kind of jump into it? Because certainly, you know, they can't just say, okay, I'm not a caregiver on Monday, but I am a caregiver on Tuesday, and I know what to do.
Well, the thing is, if it's a family member, I'm just thinking back in my own family, you know, you've got certain individuals, it could be the older one, it could be the younger one, that has a responsibility, or they assume the role. It just comes naturally, or everyone will look to them because they seem to be the one that seems to have it all together, have all the answers, seem to get things done. So the role actually falls on an individual, and, you know, heavy is the crown, as they say. And there's no training because it's a loved one, and you want to do everything for them. It comes naturally anyway. So, you know, if it's your mother, your father, you want to care for them. You want to make sure that they're okay. So there's no sort of like line up and say, well, fill out this application form, we'll think about it. It's just something that's done.
Wow. You know, and of course, this show kind of touches upon a lot of topics, but the focus of the show is around emotional intelligence. So I always say that emotional intelligence fits in with just about anything that anyone does. So do you see EI fitting in here? And how so?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Go on.
Yes. So how might it fit in? I mean, how do you see that?
Well, as I've always said, emotional intelligence is in everything that we do. And to be honest, there are some areas that seem to be incorporating emotional intelligence into their developmental nuggets of information for caregivers. You know, you've got caregivers in the community, but you've also got caregivers in a care management structure within a hospital environment. So it could be sort of like a community center or a hospital environment. So there is some form of developmental training that is given, but it's not enough. You know, they're very limited resources and it's not widespread. You know,
gotcha.
And what needs to happen is it needs to be, emotional intelligence needs to be introduced to caregivers and their families, you know, and to any other form of support or resources that's available for them to ensure that, you know, the emotional and cultural aspects are woven into it. You know, if there are resources available, that makes it all the better to work with them. But if they're not, then you have to rely on, you know, probably one or two areas that have it together, where they produce some form of development for carers, and they can get basic training around, you know, their emotional health and well-being, you know, whilst caring for a dementia patient. So it is important.
Okay, and I may be getting ahead of myself here a little bit, because some people may have tuned into the show because they saw that it said dementia, and they may not have a real understanding of what emotional intelligence is. So let me just back up just for a minute, and from your perspective, how would you define emotional intelligence? Just what is that?
Right, okay. Emotional intelligence, as we know, it's a set of emotional and social skills that collectively establish how we perceive and express ourselves, you know, how we come across to people, how we develop and maintain social relationships. So, you know, how we foster and build upon the relationships that we have, you know, within our own area or outside, across, you know, other areas or services that we may go into, or how we cope with challenges. That's another one. And then the other one is how we use the emotional information in an effective and meaningful way. So, you know, when you think about emotional intelligence, it's about understanding ourselves, our emotions, and then getting to understand other people's emotions as well. And once you actually understand that and can explore it a bit more, you can see things from another person's perspective. You can basically walk a mile in somebody else's shoes and understand when certain issues arise, why they arise, and you can be empathetic around, you know, reactions that happen, and, you know, be that calming self that actually can alleviate the problems and issues that may arise.
Well, it indeed does sound like it's a good fit here with someone with dementia or the caregiver themselves. Now, I'm just kind of throwing it out from this perspective, but do you see it being applied to the dementia patient or the caregiver, or both?
I think it can be applied to both, because understanding things from a different perspective, even with a loved one, you know, I've been speaking to a lot of caregivers in the community, and, you know, a lot of them say very similar things, where you love your family member, but it's just the simple things that you expect them to do. You know, it sometimes challenges them because they expect them to go ahead and do it. But with a dementia patient, it doesn't happen that way. And one example was one of my friends. She was saying, you know, simple thing that, you know, she was giving her mother a bath, and just the mother stepping out of the bath, it was almost like she didn't know what to do. And she said, you know, sometimes, because there's a bit of a disconnect there. So the cognitive skills are, you know, the motor, where they do certain things. When it comes to the simple things where you continue, that is disconnected. So her mother just stood there, and it was like, oh. And she said, you know, for one moment, I felt really annoyed. It was like, look, just step down. And she said, I had to collect my thoughts and say, no, she's got dementia. She doesn't know how to step down. And that kind of brings it home, because there's a disconnect there.
Yes.
There's a disconnect.
Yes.
She doesn't know what to do. So it's the patience, it's the love, the care, but it's all the emotions all wrapped up. And for caregivers, because of the time they spend with the patient, that actually does leave them feeling fatigued. So you've got the, you know, a caregiver that's giving all the time, but they don't have the respite. And if it's in a family situation and everybody looks to this one individual, nobody's really coming forward and offering and saying, look, I'll take over from you. It's a case of, you're doing such a great job, you continue doing it. And that's where the fatigue may come in.
Yeah. So let's say that does happen, and you can, I guess one can easily see that, you know, that one could probably suffer burnout, or emotional fatigue. And I'm using the term emotional fatigue only because I heard you use that term, you know, when we were talking earlier, not today, but earlier. But what would, how would you describe this emotional fatigue as it relates to a caregiver?
Well, I think emotional fatigue with a caregiver would be, you know, them that is 24/7. So unlike any other job, you don't have holidays where you can take time off. You don't have, you know, the time where you can sort of say, right, I'm going to lunch. You just sit there. You can't do that. The dementia patient has to have care all the time. And the caregiver has to be there to administer that and make sure that they are in a safe environment, all their needs are catered for. You know, if you think about emotional intelligence around the caregiver and the family members as support, it's them gaining clarity around their roles and responsibilities if the development is there. So actually understanding how they can manage their own emotions and that of others in their everyday lives makes it a little bit easier to understand how things work. So it's not just the caregivers, it's the extended family members as well. Them understanding that the role of a caregiver is not just a lone thing. Everybody needs to pitch in to make sure that their burden is evenly distributed. Otherwise, the burnout will happen if it's just left to them the whole time. You know, by gaining some form of developmental training, it would benefit them by developing techniques for them to manage the demands that caring brings and enable them to explore. Yeah.
You know, as you're talking about this, you know, I'm just thinking of it almost like a domino effect, and not that the dominoes are falling in this sense, but how one thing can lead to another, how can be applied to one individual and then the next individual and the next individual on down. So the caregiver, if he or she is skilled, let's say, in emotional intelligence, not only is he or she working with the patients that has the dementia, but they're working with the patient's maybe son or daughter. They're working with the patient's, you know, mother or father, sister or brother, cousin. So they have to use these EI skills, or should be able to use this EI skill with every family member or neighbor or whoever they interact with, whoever they come across with. Even the medical professions, they may have to interact with those. So, wow.
Yeah, almost certainly they'll have to do that. Yeah,
definitely. I can see this being limitless.
Well, it will be if they were to take it on board and adapt their way of doing things to incorporate it, because that way they'll be able to sort of like create their own strategies around the complexity of, you know, dementia care and care management. So, as we know, it is emotionally draining, you know, for the caregiver. And being able to build up their emotional and cultural resilience in the day-to-day tasks they undertake will enable them to sort of like do things a lot easier and have that time and space where they can step off, hand over the reins to somebody and get some respite rather than it falling on their shoulders day in, day out. And I think that's more than anything else, the understanding and the complexities of dementia caregiving and the fact that the role of the caregiver is sort of not just a 9-to-5 role, it's 24/7. You know, they may have others outside from the community, you know, the healthcare community, where they can actually have shifts, but not everybody has that. So it's being able to sort of like share the knowledge so that everyone is upskilled in a way that they can actually work with the dementia carer to support the dementia care patient.
Wow. See, now this just opened up, made this whole thing much larger than I was expecting or was thinking about it, because I just heard you say, you know, like the community. I heard you use other term that makes it much, much broader than just the the caregiver and the patient, you know. It's a whole community.
It is very much so. I mean, if you think about the caregivers and the care management in the hospital environment, you know, we know that they have dementia units. Our local hospital has a dementia care unit. So
right.
The care management is within the hospital environment, but then the care management staff, they work with the caregivers of the dementia patient. So it could be, you know, the close relative or somebody that's supporting them. So they work in tandem with them to make sure that the care that is given, the support that is given, is all round and everyone is aware of what needs to happen, when it needs to happen, how it needs to happen. And, you know, for me, it's about sharing best practices so everyone knows exactly what needs to happen, how it needs to happen, and the things that are highlighted are dealt with in a totally different approach and mindset.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go next in terms of, so this isn't something that there's a rule book that says if A happens, you do B, and if B happens, you do C. You have to be skilled enough to deal with the situations as they arise, it sounds like. So in this case, EI or emotional intelligence is situational when it comes to being a caregiver, because since
Absolutely.
There are different aspects of dementia, you know, what you know today or what worked today may not necessarily work tomorrow.
Yes, that is true. And as we progress, I mean, the dementia is progressive. So, you know,
right.
3, 6, 9 months time, the caregiver may be even more challenged with looking after the dementia patient because they've progressed that much more. So they need the support, they need the understanding, but they need that respite where they can step off, get upskilled, learn techniques, speak to people about, you know, how they can best, you know, look after the patient, but also
right.
how they can look after themselves as well in doing so. So it's a cyclical process, but in order, it's a bit like when you go on the airplane, when they do the mm-hmm. The actual instructions before they take off, they talk about the oxygen mask. In order for
right.
you to help somebody else, you need to have the oxygen mask on first. And I think with a lot of the caregivers, they just hit the ground running and think, right, okay, I'm just going to do. And they think, yeah, we're coping, until they don't. So they need to step off and gain that experience, gain that understanding and the support infrastructure and platform so that they can then go back and work in a different way, but also upskill and empower other schools, you know, other schools of thought with
right.
relatives as well, other family members, so that they can understand and further support as well. So it's not just one size fits all. Each family member, each situation is different.
You know, and I'm glad you shared that, because what that reminds me of, or what that brings up, of course, you know, I'm just thinking that, you know, I've just been informed that, you know, my mom or dad or whoever has dementia, and that I'm going to have to be the caregiver. I automatically just says, okay, it's time for me to hit the deck running, so to speak, to get busy being the caregiver, when I don't have any, you know, real skills on in terms of what to do. So what does it take for one to become skilled in EI? And I'm just talking about the EI piece, because that's what we're talking about, is in terms of is a good skill for me to have as a caregiver. So what do I need to do to become skilled in EI?
Well, the best way to get upskilled in emotional intelligence is to gain some insight by finding a provider that can conduct the training with you, so that you can gain more insight. That was one of the reasons why I actually designed the emotional and cultural intelligence program. It
mm-hmm.
uses the Emotional Intelligence Skills Assessment Profile 2.0 as a foundation stone for individuals to actually look at their self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. And I piloted that with 20 bilingual healthcare advocates who were working with patients, and they were patients from all across the world. English is not their first language. So for them, understanding what emotional intelligence is and how they can apply it to their roles, it was invaluable, because a lot of the patients, you know, some of them were end-of-life care, some of them were dementia patients. So they were able to actually look at the ways that they can use these skills to further help the patient, the patient's family, and also the consultant. When I conducted the training, you know, these professionals who are highly skilled in their areas, you know, a couple of them gave me stories, and I thought, oh, this is fantastic. This is how you can see emotional intelligence is working, and how they can further go back with tools and techniques to further enhance what they do to make it better, for, not only for themselves, but for the patient and for the consultant. There was one, well, there were two cases. One was a Russian patient who was due to have a surgery, and he kept disappearing off the ward. And the healthcare staff were sort of like frantic, sending out the, you know, the guards, security guards, looking for this gentleman to bring him back. And he couldn't understand why they kept bringing him back, until the Russian interpreter went and spoke to him. And he said, well, back home in Russia, this is the norm. You know, we can go home, look for our clothes, change clothes, come back. And she said, no, not here in the UK. If you leave, you have to be discharged. If you leave, you cannot come back, and you will not have your surgery. So, you know, after she spoke to him and told him, okay, I'll stay, not happy, but I'll stay. But then she went and spoke to the healthcare staff on the ward and explained to them the culture, that in his country, this is what they do, you know, and it's normal for them to go home and come back. And they said, oh, right, okay, we understand. So this is why with emotional intelligence, it's great to actually understand your emotions. But then within the healthcare environment, where a lot of the patients and the patient's families are non-English speaking, have that cultural aspect, the cultural intelligence injected in as part of it. It's like a double act. You know, these individuals, they said it was great, because they had something that they could go back to enhance their work that they already do. And it was a fantastic role. But going, you know, speaking to the consultants as well, and getting the consultants to understand things from a different perspective, that is another part of using their emotional intelligence.
And
one of the other interpreters was a Chinese lady, and her patient was end-of-life care patient. Okay. And in their culture, they don't like their family members knowing that they're going to die soon. So when the daughter saw the interpreter, she wasn't very happy, and she said, I don't want you here. So what the interpreter did, went to the consultant who was due to see them, and sat down and explained to him the culture, which he had no idea whatsoever. So what he did, he said, right, I need to speak to the daughter. So he kind of gained and tapped into his own emotional intelligence, because he then explained to the daughter, look, I know it's your culture, but you can't, you know, you can't not tell your mother. You know, you have children. So he basically put his patient's daughter in the mother's shoes and said, what if your children decided that they didn't want to tell you? And she relented. So that is a way where these interpreters, these bilingual interpreters, can use their emotional intelligence to further enhance. Because otherwise, had they not done that, there still would have been conflict, you know, especially with the culture clash and understanding. So for me, it's great that they gain this understanding through training and development. And somebody who actually does do that. So there's the ESAP, or the Emotional Intelligence Skills Assessment Profile, which enables an individual. I see that as the foundation stone, because once they start to understand that, then they can move on to, once they're more confident, they can move on to the EQI, which is more in-depth and looks at their whole profile in terms of the EQI 2.0 model.
Gotcha.
So that, yeah, so for me, it's more about finding someone to actually gain this insight into emotional intelligence from somebody that doesn't
train. So is this something that you do or could do?
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of my programs that I do, it's bespoke. And for me, it's more about finding out what's going on within the organization, what their needs are, and then I weave emotional intelligence into what they need to upskill on. So it could be a change initiative, and I will use the emotional intelligence to bring all of that together so that they can understand things from a different perspective rather than just, oh, it's change and they're upset, they're hurt, they're angry, they're disillusioned. They can see things from a different perspective, but they see things from a bigger picture perspective as well. And it works better that way. When you understand, then you can actually design something that actually works. I've just recently finished a three-part program with equality and inclusion champions within a hospital environment, and these are individuals across the different services, so their roles are different, but emotional intelligence is an integral part, and using the ESAP 2.0 model was integral, and they loved it. So it's not one size fits all. It's very much about the target audience, what their needs are, and ensuring that when they actually are upskilled, they can use the tools and resources and the understanding to further develop their work that they do and the arena that they work in.
Well, let's say that I'm a potential client, or I'm someone who's looking to do this. How much time am I investing to, you know, let's say, go through that course that you just mentioned that has the ESAP in it? What kind of time am I looking at investing? Because I'm always looking at the what we call a return on investment, my time versus, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think for the program that I do, it's exploring emotional and cultural intelligence using the ESAP. That's a half-day program, and within that time, they get to explore and understand. They get to actually do their own assessment, and then they can gain feedback from it. I use this quite a lot in a lot of the programs that I design and deliver, and it's not just healthcare. I've done one for a church, so it's a faith program that I just delivered the second cohort, and they've all graduated. First and second cohort have just graduated this weekend. And emotional intelligence was the second module that they do. And they explored it for themselves. And it was wonderful seeing how they can explore themselves and understand things, but also find the gaps that they have so that they can further work on. And as part of the program, what I offer is coaching. So once individuals go through that, and if they need or want any coaching, we can set up a coaching part after the training and then explore the gaps that they want to sort of raise up and develop on further. But it's normally either a half-day program for the exploring emotional and cultural intelligence, or I will do a full day program using the EQI 2.0 as well.
Gotcha. Well, you know, that sounds, first of all, let me say it sounds very thorough, meaning that, you know, it sounds like it takes into account, you know, the individual prior knowledge, their prior skill, you know, their prior maybe even work relationships and kinds of things that they've done in the past. So that it's not just something that's just off the shelf and one size fits all. And here, you know, take a spoon, a teaspoon of this, and you know, call me in the morning kind of thing. You know, it sounds like it's something that, you know, you've spent some time.
I do think I like the spoonful of you know, whatever, because I think Dr. Hines has a nice ring to it. But I think not everybody in the different working environments takes things on board differently. So for them, I have to take into consideration the area that I'm working with, the target audience, their learning styles and understanding. So I may have a varied group, but I'm quite adaptable and flexible. And, you know, individuals will pick out of the learning what applies to them. And that's what they will take and run with. And that's the beauty of it, because nobody goes away empty-handed. They go away with more than what they walk through the door with, always.
Oh, wow. That sounds, first of all, if I say it sounds good, I mean, it sounds like the kind of seminar or workshop or program that I would want to go through, where the instructor or the facilitator, you know, is really concerned about what I'm getting, not them getting through the material, which is what you sometimes see, you know, in some seminars and workshops. You know, they would just want to get through the material, and it becomes, you know, like we say at the barbershop, next.
That's not my training. People are my passion. So for me, I will share everything that I know, because I already know it, and it, you know, they gain from it. So for me, it's a pleasure to be able to share the knowledge that I have and work with individuals so that they can sort of like see things differently for themselves and how they can develop and nurture and grow the skills and gifts that they've got. You know, when people come back to me, it's to build upon the knowledge that they've already gained. So for me, then I know that, you know, it's working. It's working.
Now, this is a very important part of the program here, and that is where I ask, you know, this question of, is what you do somewhat localized, or are you available to do this, let's say, anywhere? I'm just asking because
as I said to one young lady, I did a taster session this weekend. I was away for a week in Wales and just came back yesterday. So I did a taster session, and one of the ladies said, look, I really want to do this program, but I'm half in the UK and half in Nigeria. And I said to her, no problem, I have a passport, we'll travel. So to me, I can take my programs anywhere, as long as the need is there. If people want to be upskilled, you know, I'm willing and able to travel to where, you know, they need it. There's one that I'll be doing in Ipswich next month. There'll be a taster and a program to follow there. So for me, that's about an hour and a half, hour and 45 drive from where I am, and it's in another area. And that was down to somebody sort of like seeing me deliver a presentation and was really interested and wanted to know more. So for me, it's about, if the need is there, I'll go, you know, and if, who knows, I may be doing it online as well.
Okay. Well, you know, the other part to this, part two to this question is, let's say that someone is listening to the show today and they say, boy, that sounds pretty interesting. I'd like for her to either come and do this, or I'd certainly like to find out a little bit more about this. How could they reach you? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, I do have scheduled programs on my website. Already booked in, especially for the Exploring Emotion and Cultural Intelligence. And that is www.wilsonhinesconsulting.com. That's Wilson, Wilson, Hinds, Hinds, consulting, all one word, .com. Or my email address is jah@wilsonhinesconsulting.com. So they can either explore it on the website and contact me through there, or they can email me direct on my email address.
All right. All right. So someone that's interested, you just heard, and one of the good things about the show is it will be available via podcast within a couple of hours. So if you miss the show while it's live, you can always come back later and you can pick it up and you can still get that information in terms of how to reach Jackie, because she's been sharing some really great information, and not just about, you know, dementia, but actually about caregivers. So it doesn't matter. It sounds like, now I may be, you know, a little off base here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say, you know, a caregiver can be a caregiver in a lot of different ways. Maybe, you know, a patient with dementia, or a patient, you know, that has end of life issues, or a patient with cancer, or a patient with a broken leg. You know, a caregiver is a caregiver, and he or she needs to use these skills. So it's more about the skills of a caregiver than anything else. And dementia was just used as a topic to get into the discussion of how a caregiver makes use of these skills. Now, was I too far off base, or how did I do?
I think you did really well, Hank. The topic of dementia, it's growing, especially in the Black and minority ethnic community, where there is little or no support. So there is a big need for caregivers in the community, especially in the community, because within the care management infrastructure in a hospital, they're somewhat cushioned and there are service provisions there. But with caregivers in the community, there is little or no support or infrastructure there that will develop or attend to the needs that some of them may have, and they just have to muddle through. And this is where the emotionally intelligent versus the emotionally exhausted caregiver comes into play. So, dementia is big, but you've covered, because it can be, emotional intelligence, as I said, is in everything that we do. So within the healthcare, it's not just dementia, it's across the whole healthcare infrastructure. You can use emotional intelligence top down, bottom up. It's not apportioned to anyone. So there are no demarcation lines there. EQ is for everyone. I'm just quoting your book.
That sounds familiar. EQ is for everyone. Thank you so much for plugging the book in there. But that is really how I look at it. So let me just, before we sign off, I just personally want to say thank you very much for taking time to be on the show today. I really appreciate it and look forward to having you back again to share some more information, not only about what you're doing, but, you know, what's going on in the UK and how EI is being used and where it's being used and so forth and so on. So, you know, thanks. Really appreciate you taking time today to be on the show. Well, this is Dr. Hank, and you've been listening to The Dr. Hank Show. And today the show was about dementia, caregivers, and the role of emotional intelligence. Really, as I was saying as it was signing off, it is really not just dementia. You know, it's about caregivers and the role of being a caregiver, and the fact that emotional intelligence is a tool that a caregiver, regardless of what they're giving care in, can really put in their toolbox and use. Because as you heard our guest say, EQ is for everyone. So certainly you could include the caregiver in that. Well, this is about all the time I have today. We're going to be signing off here shortly, but before I do so, just want to recap a couple of things I had said at the beginning of the show. and that is that I just had the book signing event here in Tampa, Florida this past week, and I really want to say thanks to everyone that turned out for the book signing event. I appreciate that. You know, I look forward to seeing you again, and don't let this be the only time that I see you. We're going to have another book signing coming up July 26th. Yes, July 26th, and that one is going to be in Orlando, Florida at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center. Florida Hotel and Conference Center. So if you missed the one in Tampa, Florida, you can certainly catch the one coming up in Orlando, Florida. And it'll be from 6 to 8, July 26th, at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Florida Hotel and Conference Center is connected to the Florida Mall, so you can get a little shopping done after you attend the book signing event. So come on out, you know, meet, greet, make friends with others. Hopefully, look forward to seeing you there. This is Dr. Hank saying thanks for being with us. Please, everyone, go out and have an EI day. Forward to seeing you back here again next week, same time, same place.